Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. This is episode 83. It's February 5th, 2015. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealth Studying Podcast, my mission is to help you not only build your net worth, but more importantly, help you attain personal freedom. And I do that by teaching what I call wealth building principles. If you're not familiar with those, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. That's where I lay out my foundation and the philosophy that's helped me get to where I'm at over these nearly 30 years or so. Now, in each episode, I take a theme from at least one or more of those wealth building principles and I weave it into the show. Now, I always don't say what it's about or give you the specific tie-in, but you can be sure that every episode is produced through the filter of one of those 10 wealth building principles. And today's no exception. When I prepared for today's show, I was considering the themes of wealth building principle number 8, decrypting propaganda, and number 6, profit from trends. The one thing I'll mention real briefly, and this does tie into the propaganda as well, and that's the recent revelations that NBC anchorman Brian Williams, for all these years, has been lying about how he was shot down in an army helicopter in 2003. Well, it's not scandalous to me because I don't hold news anchors and celebrities up to a very high standard. And I won't really comment on what Brian Williams did. I did write a blog post about that today. If you want to read that, you can go over to the observations and commentary section at my firm's website, which is investablewealth.com. I will say this about Brian Williams' future. I predict that Dan Rather will present Brian Williams with the Edward R. Murrow Award. And you can probably take that one to the bank. Hey, before we get started, I do want to have a shout out for a dear friend of mine. He's a huge supporter of this podcast. He really goes out of his way to tell people about the show and to help spread the word about things that he's interested in and events and causes that he feels are important. He's a super prepper. He's a good friend of this show. Thomas, you know who you are. I just wanted to shout out and let you know that I am in possession of my new toy and I can't wait to go out and play with it. Well, that's all that needs to be said about that. Hey, but let's get into our main topic, and that's where I want to talk to you about Greece and Radio Shack and the effects that they're going to have on the market, what they have in common, and then you can probably see on your own where propaganda and identifying value all tie into this. Well, I think many of you know Greece is on the verge of bankruptcy. They'll possibly be pulling out of the euro. There's a lot of gloom and doom that people are forecasting with that. Likewise, as far as Radio Shack, they're on the verge of bankruptcy. And again, there are people predicting major consequences in the markets because of that. And they're fearful of a Radio Shack collapse, not only because of the impact of things like the internet are having on brick and mortar, old established retail companies, but also the impact that it'll have on commercial and retail real estate. So let's think about this for a minute. First of all, I'll pose a question to you. What do Greece and Radio Shack both have in common? Well, the answer is that neither one has anything that any of us want to buy. Oh, sure, Greece has nice beaches. I wouldn't mind spending a week or so there soaking up the sun, but that's not likely to happen anytime soon. And I walked around my house today, and I couldn't find one thing that appeared to be manufactured in Greece or somehow came from Greece. You know, nothing in the pantry, nothing in the refrigerator, no olives or anything. And I sure didn't find any furniture or clothing or any kind of products like that that I've ever bought from Greece. So Greece's demise basically comes down to the fact that it's a country of 10 million people, and their big claim to fame is tourism. But you get outside of that tourism sector, that service sector that they provide there, and they just don't manufacture or export anything that anybody wants. And obviously, with the way they're in debt, they're not doing a very good job making money off the tourism sector either. And it's because they're bogged down by such a corrupt and inefficient government. That's the bottom line. Nothing's going to change. They can default on their debt. They can leave the euro. They can do all these types of things. But unless they get some kind of a structural change and they reduce the size of their government and they go to more of a market-based economy, and I don't think any of this is likely to happen, but until they do those kind of things, then they are still going to be plagued with a failing economy. I mean, do you know that the unemployment rate right now in Greece is something like 30% and it's even higher for young people? I mean, can you imagine that? And this isn't something that just happened this year or last year. This is a systemic, long-term problem. And it's not unique to Greece. Many of the southern European countries are plagued by the same big government spending and small private market, you know, a market that's just too overtaxed and doesn't have any type of growth prospects to claw its way out of the huge private and public debt that these countries are burdened by. But Greece is by far the worst. I have no idea if they'll go bankrupt. the recent left-leaning government that just got elected in the last week or so. They're trying to play hardball and trying to really play a tough poker hand when it comes to the European Central Bank, other countries such as Germany, and the International Monetary Fund. They're trying to get as much of their debt forgiven, or to get the best terms they can, or to totally default if they can without any consequences. But that's just it. I can't see a country like Germany letting Greece default and get away totally scot-free. Now, they may default, but there have to be some type of consequences or sanctions. Otherwise, why would other countries like Italy or Spain or Portugal, what would be the incentive for them to pay their bills? Why wouldn't they just default, or why wouldn't they just try and get all their debts forgiven? So I believe that somehow the European Central Bank and Germany and the International Monetary Fund, they're going to put the screws to Greece. And again, there could still be a default. Greece could still end up leaving the European Union. But there have to be some kind of consequences just to prevent a country like Italy that's also on the brink, you know, just to stop them from mailing in the keys and saying, hey, I'm not making the mortgage payment anymore. Now, personally, I do think they're going to come up with some kind of a 11th hour agreement, and they're going to save Greece somehow, or at least kick the can down the road for the next couple years. But in any case, even if Greece does default, it's not going to bring down the entire European economy. Oh, sure, there'll be bumps in the road. It'll cause some problems. There'll be a lot of market turbulence. And that approach, too, as we get closer to the end of the month, when some of the big loans that are outstanding come due. But there'll probably be some emergency loans, and then that'll be propelled into March. And like I say, eventually over these next couple weeks or couple months, if they don't get this resolved, the European markets will be up and down. But I see this as more as an opportunity than a risk. And that's why, if you remember, I mentioned that last week I did rotate into some foreign stocks, and several or many of them are right in the heart of the European Union. And I'm doing this in spite of those people in the media that are trying to say that a Greece default will create a total euro crisis. I don't believe that. And I say that based on not only the data, but also the price volume action on the companies and countries that are based in Western Europe. The markets are holding up very well. The positions that I'm in, I'm very happy with. Not to give any specific recommendations, but just as a statement of fact, if you look at some of the ETFs that would be invested in these countries, you'll see that they're doing quite well just in the last week or so. Germany and France are both up close to 2.5%. Ireland's up over 4%. So I'm happy with that, but I'm also not putting all my eggs in one basket. As far as international funds, I've spread my money around. I'm also in one country in Asia. I'm in one country in North America. And then I've also started to move into some niche specialty markets within the U.S. financial banking sector. I think that market's undervalued. And again, I don't see a currency collapse or any major financial crisis coming from what we know of right now. And when I say that, I'm specifically talking about Greece. Now, if Russia lobs a nuclear bomb over into Ukraine overnight, that's a different story. That would be an uncertainty that's just too wide scale to predict. So I'm not talking about something like that. I'm just talking about a failure within Greece, within the Greek borders. I don't think that's going to bring down Europe. I don't think that's going to affect the U.S. market. And that's at this point. Now, my thoughts may change in 3 days. They may change in 2 weeks. They may change as we get closer to the end of this month. We'll see how the negotiations work out. We'll see what the price and volume action of major European countries and their corresponding companies. We'll look at those company stocks, like large German stocks. We'll see how they're doing. We'll let the market tell us what they think the outcome's going to be. That's how I'm investing. And I'm ignoring all the gloom and doomers that are predicting a financial collapse and are telling you to sell the euro and buy gold. I just don't think it's going to happen, not in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Just my opinion. And the same can be said with Radio Shack, and that's why I brought it up. Radio Shack has no future. Even if Greece goes bankrupt, they're going to survive. They're a sovereign country. They have a long tradition. They have some really cool museums and architecture and art. And they've got wonderful beaches. So Greece isn't going anywhere, even if they default. Radio Shack, on the other hand, I don't think they have a future at all. I think they're destined for bankruptcy. I can't believe they've held on this long. And I don't say this as a Radio Shack hater. Those of you that know me know that I'm a ham radio nerd, but having said that, there's still nothing in Radio Shack that I really want to buy. They've gotten very sloppy and lazy over the decades. They relied on totally selling cell phones and batteries, and that market's not working out so well for them now. They've been propped up on irrational investor support and then on the cheap money from low interest rates. That's really what's kept them afloat these last couple years. But it just comes down to they don't have anything that anybody wants to buy. Now, the few things that would be unique to a Radio Shack store that I may even want to go in there and buy, I'm just going to get those from the internet. And most Radio Shack stores don't even carry those unique items that they used to carry in the past. The transistors and the special coax adapters, things like that. They've gotten rid of a lot of that. You see, they got away from what they're really all about. Radio Shack really wasn't about radios or electronics per se. It was more about kits. Their niche in the market wasn't to go there and buy a finished product. You could get that anywhere, even before the internet. Right, a TV, a cell phone, that's all available somewhere else. Radio Shack has a very small store footprint. The only way you can compete when you have a very small retail space is to sell something unique at high margins. So for them to just try and sell electronics, computers and radios and different things like that, TVs, things that you can get at Best Buy or some other type of big box electronics store, Radio Shack just had too small of a footprint to ever really successfully compete in that market. So what Radio Shack did in its early days and what they should be doing now would be specializing in that hobby kit electronic type marketplace. You know, what we would call today a maker's market. There are a lot of makers out there. 30, 40 years ago, they called those people ham radio operators, or people build Heath kits, things like that. And you may think that that market doesn't exist anymore, but it really does. Now, there probably aren't as many people building ham radios and things like that as they were in the 30s and 40s, but there are plenty of people that are into making things. There's a big maker movement. This is where the Arduino and the Raspberry Pi and all these small little computerized electronic things have spurred out of. So there is a $1 billion or more market out there. But it's not just the commodity consumer electronic market that Radio Shack's been competing in. The only way that these guys could have survived is if they would have really specialized in that niche maker market, selling all the little corresponding parts and things like 3D printers, all the nerdy stuff, and the books and DVDs that go along with it, and then sponsoring things like podcasts and meetups, bringing guest speakers into their stores, having knowledgeable sales reps there that can help people with their projects. I mean, it's really about the electronics hobby. And that's where Radio Shack fell down, that's where they failed, and that's why they have no future. Now, Radio Shack's bankruptcy and their subsequent closing of all the stores, it will send some ripples through the real estate market. I mean, no doubt they have thousands of locations, but they're not big enough to collapse the market. Those stores will eventually be taken over. You know, there's rumors that maybe somebody like an Amazon will come in and buy some of those so that they can use them as some brick and mortar showrooms. There's going to be just little local businesses like nail salons and stuff like that that move into some of those stores. There's a lot of them, but it's not very big floor space, and so they'll be absorbed. The real problem in the real estate market, and I'm talking the retail commercial real estate market, it's not Radio Shack. Radio Shack is like Greece. When Greece goes under, it won't collapse Europe. When Radio Shack goes under, it's not going to collapse the real estate market. What would have to happen for the real estate market to fall apart in the U.S. is that Radio Shack would have to be followed by the big players, just like Greece would have to be followed by Portugal and Italy and Spain. Likewise, Radio Shack closures would have to be followed by Sears and JCPenney's and Barnes & Noble and Office Depot and all these other brick-and-mortar guys that are struggling and can't compete with internet sales. Now, I know many of those stores have already closed, but they're not totally bankrupt yet. There's still a lot of them that are up and running. When or if they do all collapse, and I think that's more likely to happen than Greece going bankrupt, I mean, I don't know how stores like Barnes & Noble and Sears stay in business. Whatever kind of balance sheet gimmicks they're using, and like Radio Shack, they're probably just propped up with cheap, easy, low interest rate money. But those stores just can't compete. Like Greece and like Radio Shack, they're selling things that nobody wants to buy. Eventually, they will succumb to market pressures and they'll go out of business. And again, that retail space will probably just be absorbed into the economy, provided that they don't all collapse at one time. That would be the fear. If Sears and JCPenney's and Barnes & Noble, if they all go out at once, then yes, I think we could see some real problems in the commercial real estate business and some real repercussions. But right now, we just don't know. We'll have to wait and see how long those other players can hold on. But for sure, I personally think Radio Shack's going out, and I'm sure none of you will miss it. Well, that's all I have for today's episode. I still owe you a show about why we're not seeing runaway hyperinflation. And that sort of goes along with today's topic about Greece going bankrupt and why that's not going to cause hyperinflation, or why that's not going to cause the European Union to collapse or the euro currency to collapse. You see, Greece just isn't big enough. Even if 100% of their debt got wiped out, they only owe something like $400 billion. Now, I know that at some point when we start talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, that's real money, but that can be absorbed. These central bankers just print money. That's only about 4 or 5 months of quantitative easing, and that's if they wiped out every single debt that Greece has ever incurred, and that's not going to happen. Greece isn't going to get away scot-free. In any case, I'll come back in a future episode, possibly the next one or the one after that, and we'll talk about hyperinflation, why we haven't seen it up to this point, even with all the quantitative easing, even with the $4.5 trillion that's on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, even with all the deficit spending in the United States, even with central bankers all around the world going totally crazy and totally insane. There's a key reason why we aren't seeing hyperinflation, and we'll talk about that in the near future. Until then, if you have any questions or concerns or you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do that through the website, which is wellsteading.com. I'd also like to thank all of you that have gone out and subscribed in iTunes and have left comments and reviews there. Thanks so much. I know that takes effort. I really appreciate it. The only way this podcast community can grow is if you do things like that, if you put things on your social media, like LinkedIn or Facebook, and you talk about a blog article that I do, or if you refer people back to this podcast episode. That's fabulous. I appreciate your efforts. Those of you that have done that, keep up the good work. Until next time, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.